one cold November night, 101 years ago, a man sat at a table in the middle of a dry pond contemplating an olive. Contemplating an olive. As olives go, it was perfectly ordinary, except for the vestigial wings sprouting from three of its corners. It also tended to fade in and out of focus, but when it was in focus, the olive appeared to be black. Dark black. Blacker even than the magic to which it owed its existence. Plus, it was one of those rare olives called blamos that occasionally explode when they attain consciousness. So, perhaps it wasn't so ordinary after all. Well, then, the man whose olive was the object of his contemplation was entirely ordinary. After all, he had no wings. He didn't... Come on, sit down,
just
be
hurry
quick
up,
about
hurry
it.
Hurry up. You think we just do this for health?
Climate.
Certainly not for your entertainment.
No. Ah, but the man was entirely...
Will you get back over there?
So the man was entirely not so ordinary.
Not so ordinary.
Not
all
so
right.
entirely.
Right.
He was entirely ordinary.
Ordinary.
After all, he had no wings, he didn't fade in and out of focus, and he had not detonated yet anyway. What he had done, however, was to communicate with the olive on a very primitive level. He hissed. The olive hissed back. He rubbed his elbow. The olive wriggled one of its wings. He hummed a whole tone scale. And the olive, no matter it was physically incapable of humming, reproduced the scale a semitone higher. An impossibility, you say?
Yes.
Not at all.
No.
You see, in only a few weeks, the olive would change from a small edible droop into the larval stage of Olive Messiaen, a French music monger.
Wait, now, you have this problem with olives. So here. Now, there was a, don't you look in there. There was an episode of Abbott and Costello where he didn't like certain things. So let's try that to start with. Olive oil. Good?
Popeye.
All right. So olive oil is good.
Sure.
No fear of olive
no.
oil. Now, I stopped off at the Healthy Living Market, and I got some green olives to go with some things. How's that?
Bad. Very bad.
All right.
Very
all right.
Bad.
Well, those that you would have to eat those. Then.
No,
but now,
very bad.
Wait. No,
yes.
I'm not done here yet. Now,
Popeye.
Since here's something you don't have to eat. I have to get this one open, too. All right. There
we have
we
a
go.
Concert, you know.
Yes, I know. But here's, how about an olive necklace? Edible, but you don't have to eat them.
Right. Okay. That's
all right.
That's pretty revealing.
All right. Back to Olive A. Messiaen. All right.
There is precedent for a stone fruit turning into a composer. Luigi Cherubini was descended from a bowl of cherries.
Yes.
And Harry was a peach long before he became a parch. The transmogrification of the olive to Olive Messiaen was notable only because it took place in the middle of a dry pond. Interspecific transformations involving whole tone scales typically occur in environments that feature sodden climes. But if we examine the pond more closely, we see that it isn't dry after all. Scattered higgledy-piggledy across the bed are small pockets of ooze from which lichen-encrusted rocks protrude. Pull out any one of them and you'll likely find the underside coated with slime mold. And if there's a better place for a composer to take root, science hasn't yet discovered it. Composers started showing up in slimy ecosystems in the late 1800s as deciduous logs and leaf mold gradually replaced caves as suitable and, indeed, desirable living quarters for them. Hamilton Harty.
Of course.
Nikolai Medtner.
Oh, yeah.
Hilding Rosenberg.
Yes.
Cyril Scott.
My favorite! A composer you have performed to the detriment of all the listeners.
You're not kidding. And others sprang seemingly spontaneously into existence in surroundings shunned by earlier tunesmiths. It would be unfair to say that their compositions reflected these environs. However, we never said we were fair.
Never.
And there must be some reason that none of these four is at the top of many music aficionados' best-in-show lists. But back to the olive.
The olive. It's gone.
Ah, good.
I
having
have
been
these.
No, thanks.
Sure.
Having been sufficiently contemplated by the man sitting at the table, it retreated deep within itself to begin its lugubrious makeover into French human form. Oh, please. A month later, Olivier spontaneously combusted in the womb of Cécile Sauvage, and the rest, as they say, is historical revisionism. Although Messiaen's forebears can be traced to a copse in the eastern Mediterranean basin, the same cannot be said for the other composers on today's concert. In fact, we're not even sure they're descended from fleshy fruit. Peter Hamlin?
Yes, over there. He's over there.
Chaka Nin?
Yes,
not here.
Not here.
Zachary Couper?
Here, and coming right up
now. Coming right up. These names don't exactly ring a bell in the date and apricot cosmos. They do, however, ring the bell on the door of the house attached to this radiophonic broadcast.
Yes.
And we, Kalpos and Damien, yes, are in the house right now. The door is already open.
They're closed now.
The door is already closed.
Closed?
Too bad. So we invite you, the audience assembled, to join us and the aforementioned musical facilitators
in the house.
Zachary Couper, you're coming over real quick to tell us who you are. There you are.
What? You can't be funnier than we are.
No, no, yes, he can. It's not very hard. Zachary Couper is the first composer on the program. He's younger than us by almost a third. I mean, he's a third our age. And he's better than us.
What?
What? It's staggering. Okay, so how did you get into this business? And then tell us a little bit about this caterpillar piece.
Well, it's about caterpillars, and yep, like David and I were saying about the little bugs and also the
D7 that
the
move
D7, right, the dirt movers.
Yeah.
I
guess that's enough.
It, yeah?
Yeah, that's enough.
It's about it. That's all.
Succinctly said.
You'll love it. This is a great piece. Thanks,
Zachary. Thank you.
No, don't encourage him. Band?
Zachary Couper. What's the tune? Caterpillar Secrets. That's it. Here they are.
Thank you. Steve Klimowski and Bonnie Thurber Klimowski playing Zachary Cooper's Caterpillar Secrets. Why are we here?
Why is any of us here?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different with us because we're sort of, we don't belong here.
We do.
We do, yes.
We're working for free.
Yes. Calvis and Damien, our radio show and now podcast as well, it will be hosting this season. Those of you who are here at the last VCMA concert know that. So
For free.
So let's just get that out of the way. We're done with that. You know, Zachary Cooper's piece is really interesting because those of you who are familiar with new music are thinking there's something unusually elegant and at the same time disparate about that piece. And it's something that the composer and Village Voice critic Kyle Gann calls post-classical. And it's an ability to integrate not only the sort of previous, two generations previous of modernism, but reaching back and into sort of harmonic realms and wonderful melodic realms that come as a surprise, as well as, you know, even some places you would hear the intimations of almost an Alberti bass of a kind of classical era sound. And so this come to expect this because we have an entirely new generation of composition of composers coming into the field who are bringing this new sound. By the way, Zachary, a student of Thomas L. Reed, who's sitting right in the back there, a member of the VCME himself. So we're going to move to Peter Hamlin's Visions of Vice. Now, this is a fantastic piece, a very, very, very subtle piece. It's based on or inspired by the photographs of Chris Robbins. Chris, are you here? I can't see because of the lights. Are you here? You join us, perhaps, if you're here. Chris? Yes, there you are. Great. Welcome. Now tell us about the photographs and tell us how they became kind of an inspiration.
Well, we like to go out skating and we like walking in the wintertime, and I took my camera out, and when I see a bubble in the ice or frost on the window or, you know, crystals in a mud puddle, I like to photograph it. I like to do close-ups so people don't really know what they are. And I have a lot of them. I have a couple hundred.
I was going to ask, is it more, sort of more than a hobby? In other words, you have a real intense perception of how ice works.
Yeah, and it can be crystalline and sharp, or it can be very fluid. And Peter was interested in those aspects of it, and he used the structure of ice crystals to structure the intervals and the rhythm of this piece.
Kurt Vonnegut once wrote a novel called Cat's Cradle, in which one of the components was ice 9, a very cold mineral. Did you ever find that?
Did I ever find ice 9?
Yes.
Well, I don't know.
You probably would know if you found it.
Would it make the whole world freeze if you did find it?
Something like that.
Think on that order, yes.
Yeah.
So did you suggest this, or did Peter suggest it, or was it an idea that came when you were perhaps out hiking or something?
Well, I used to think it would be nice to have a slideshow with music. And Peter actually did it differently. He picked 8 pictures and really tailored the movements to each one of those.
And we will see these images during the course of the piece, and also we'll have some of your photographs available during intermission and reception as well. This is brilliant. Can we bring you up here, Peter? This would be great. Chris Robbins, thanks so much. That's great.
Tag team interviews,
yes, indeed. So, Peter, tell us a little bit more about the piece and how you came to the images and your perspective on how they work to make the music happen.
I think I picked the more abstract ones. Chris had some beautiful landscape, you know, realistic pieces. I picked the ones that just were about shape and form, and they do have a really nice emotional kind of atmosphere about them. But the idea of it is that the images suggested musical things like freezing, for example, itself. There's one of the things the computer does is it takes the music coming in from the players and then just takes one tiny little moment of it and freezes it. And also the idea of something fluid forming crystals. So there are lots of musical things like the chords I used, the different rhythmic materials like Chris mentioned that are analogous to the way ice crystals are structured.
Now, you have the microphones in front of the players. You are sampling what they're playing and what they sort of what they have played in the process and using that to create, what would you call it in this case, a recomposition or a textural nest? Or what sort of, how do you think of it?
Maybe like a fourth instrument where you're in control of the timeline.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the fourth instrument can go back and play something that happened a minute ago, that kind of thing. It's very interesting that, you know, the older types of electronic music were you would have a tape because the computer wasn't fast enough to generate the music in real time.
Right.
And so you'd have a tape, and the tape would be rigid. But this idea is very interesting to me. The players get to determine a lot of what happens, and then the computer reacts to it. Sometimes, surprisingly, and other times I sort of know what it's going to do.
Great.
Okay.
Have you considered a scratch and sniff component to this piece?
No.
That's a fair answer.
Peter Hamlin.
No adventure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, maybe we could do that at the next concert.
Smell ice, I mean, there's really nothing to it.
Depends on what you make it from. We have horses. We can bring some of that. Here we go. Visions of Ice. Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble and Peter Hamlin on electronics.
Thank you. Thank you. Berta Frank on flute and alto flute, Steve Klimowski clarinet and bass clarinet, and Bonnie Thurber Klimowski on the cello. Music inspired by the photographs of Chris Robbins. That was Visions of Ice by Peter Hamlin. There's an intermission now, during which we hope we'll go over and take a look at the CDs and books and other items over there. And not just take a look, but actually, unlike last night's audience, actually purchase some of them. Purchasing them helps support this ensemble, and there's some gorgeous music, some good writing, some fantastic stuff there. We'll see you after intermission. You're listening to Calvus and Damien
in the house
on the Non-Pop International Network.